Good morning, everyone. Happy Thursday. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, December 12, 2019. I'm reading to you from our studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Patsy Pukots. I'm glad you're listening. I'm going to start with a look at the weather and the headlines from the front page. And today's weather, we've got some clouds, and it says we have a high of 38 and a low of 19. Expect mostly cloudy skies with a south wind of 6 to 10 miles per hour. And on the front page, we have articles about honoring nurses, flooded farmers face growing dilemma in warming world, a Fort Dodge man enters a guilty plea for first-degree robbery, and our community is honoring veterans, and it holds its second annual fundraiser. And that article is called Helping Veterans. So let's begin with honoring nurses. And we have a very large picture here above the fold of Deb Shriver, who is watching as Jenny Zalot and Suzanne Foster unveil a new statue inside the main entrance of Unity Point Health. This article is by Elijah Decius. A new sculpture inside the main entrance of Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center, unveiled Wednesday, honors the often unsung heroes of the medical field, nurses. The 3-foot-tall Healer's Touch sculpture, crafted with serpentine stone by artist in Zimbabwe, was donated by 39-year nurse and administrator Deborah Shriver and her husband Brian. It sits on a pedestal donated by Scott Johnson at Kayleen Johnson Monument Company of Fort Dodge. We credit Deb's leadership, belief in lifelong learning skills, and compassion for nursing staff, said CEO Lee Glasgow at the unveiling ceremony. Because of her leadership and encouragement, many of our nurses have earned their bachelor's and master's degrees, a huge accomplishment as she encouraged them to keep growing and learning. And after her retirement in May, Deborah Shriver gave Trinity Regional Medical Center another reason to celebrate her service. The new fixture donated by her has been in the works for about 15 months. The new sculpture, which represents a nurse embracing a patient, has meaningful parallels to the Shona tribe that made it, where traditional shaman healers are also held in high esteem. The healer's touch symbolizes the relationship between nurses, patients, and families. A plaque next to the sculpture shows a recent recipient of the Daisy Award, also honored by the sculpture's unveiling. The Daisy Award, which has been awarded to nurses at the Fort Dodge Hospital for the last 12 years under Deborah Shriver's leadership, was started by the Daisy Foundation, a nonprofit formed in 1989 by the family of J. Patrick Barnes. Barnes died at age 33 of complications from an immune system disorder after 8 weeks in a hospital. The nursing care Patrick received when hospitalized profoundly touched his family. DAISY stands for Diseases Attacking the Immune System. Extraordinary nurses qualify for the award's recognition through a positive attitude, exceptional professionalism, extraordinary care to patients and families, and is earned through mutual trust and respect, and a focus on meeting patient and family alongside proactive leadership. Recipients of the award demonstrate excellent interpersonal skills, and collaboration with healthcare teams to meet patient and family needs. The nurses are the cornerstone of care in our organization, said Glasgow. They're the ones who touch our patients and change lives, so we want them to know how important they are and to know the difference they make. It's a symbol of how much I've appreciated all the great staff here and how much I've enjoyed working with patients over the years, said Deborah Shiver. I'm hoping it's something that all staff will be able to enjoy and be able to think about as they provide care. Trinity Regional Medical Center hopes the sculpture continues to inspire and remind the heroes in scrubs of their impact on the world. And there's another picture here of Deb and her husband Brian standing with the sculpture. And it does look like someone holding someone else. It's very nice. All right, our second article on the front page is called Helping Veterans. And this also is by Elijah. As the holiday season gets well underway, some Fort Dodge community members remember that not everyone has it so easy during the most wonderful time of the year. Winter's an especially hard time for veterans, said Donald Sells, organizer for Our Community Honoring Veterans, a fundraiser in its second year. As the cold, short days start to hit home, a few quilts may generate some warmth in spirit and in practical health for veterans' families. Three quilts donated by Deer Creek apartment residents will be available for those nominated by the public for their service. All funds raised through the program will be distributed to veterans and their families in need as they go through a rough patch. That's the whole idea, Sells said. The public can nominate any veteran at any of the following sponsors' locations: Shimcap Motor Company and its Facebook page, Troy Waller Auto Body Works, Brown Shoe Fit, and Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 1856. The effort is also sponsored by Webster County Veterans Affairs. Nominations will include a vet's name, what branch they served in, I'm sorry, got a tickle in my throat, what sets them apart, and their contact information. Boxes at each location allow folks to donate whatever they feel moved to contribute and purchase raffle tickets as well. This year, Sells said, the fundraiser is aiming to bring in $2,000. Last year, they raised $750. He would like to double fundraising every year to continue to grow the effort. Keep in mind that every bit we raise goes to those who need it the most, he said. Anything we can do for the vets still isn't enough. They deserve everything we can do, plus. As a father of a veteran who calls the fundraiser his baby, making sure veterans are taken care of is an issue close to his heart. I started thinking what I could do to help veterans, he said. I said, let's do something else. Let's raise money more than quilts. It means a lot to me, he added. No family should be without. VFW Commander Chris Wieland said keeping veterans in our thoughts in visible ways throughout the year is important, especially during the holidays when many deployed can't be home with their families. It's just a lot harder, he said. Raffle ticket holders will be notified if they win after a drawing on December 20th. This year's patriotic donations, two quilts and an afghan, were made and donated by Eileen Warner, Nina Fedkinhar, and Irene Whitehill. Veterans going through a period of difficulty are encouraged to reach out to resources at Webster County Veterans Affairs for resources and forms of assistance available to them. Director Dan Lewandowski can be reached at 515-573-1479. And here again, there's a picture of the quilts that have been donated, and they are very pretty. One has been knit, and the other two have been pieced together like quilts. Very nice, and a very good thing for them to do. All right, the third article I'm going to read from the front page is entitled, The Fort Dodge Man Enters a Guilty Plea for First-Degree Robbery. Foy robbed a man at gunpoint, and this is by Chad Thompson. A Fort Dodge man accused of ordering a man to get on his knees while brandishing a gun and ultimately stealing $350 and a cell phone has entered a guilty plea on the charges of first-degree robbery and second-degree theft. That plea from Blair Foy, 28, was filed on Wednesday, according to online records. According to criminal complaints, at around 2 a.m. on September 14th, Foy displayed a semi-automatic handgun with a suppressor and ordered a man to get on his knees. After the man complied, Foy took a set of vehicle keys, $350 in cash, and $50 increments and a cell phone. Police believe Foy attempted to force the man into the vehicle he arrived in, but he was able to escape from Foy with the help of a distraction from another party present. A cell phone was later recovered in the vehicle in which Foy had arrived and departed the scene of the crime in the 400 block of South Lucas Avenue in Eagle Grove. First-degree robbery is a Class C felony. Second-degree theft is a Class D felony. Foy faces a total of 15 years in prison on the two charges. All right, so much for the front page. Let's go to the second page, if I can get there. Here we go. All right, and we have a picture from 15 years ago of some girls in the Santa Lucia deal. After being crowned the new Lucia, Nicole Bergman of Stratford leads Lucia Tagent, which is a Lucia train, as they proceed to the reception following the inaugural Sancta Lucia Festival in Stratford at Stratford Lutheran Church. Other candidates pictured are Ashley Ferret, Amanda Westrom, and Sarah Carlson. Boy, won't they be surprised when they see that in the paper this morning. Now let's look at this date in history. This is by the Associated Press. Today is Thursday, December 12th. It's the 346th day of 2019, and there are 19 days left in this year. Excuse me. That might make it better. On December 12th, 2000, happened today's highlight, which was when George W. Bush became president-elect as a divided U.S. Supreme Court reversed a state court decision for recounts in Florida's contested election. Also on this date, in 1787, Pennsylvania became the second state to ratify the U.S. Constitution. In 1870, Joseph H. Rainey of South Carolina became the first black lawmaker sworn into the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1913, authorities in Florence, Italy, announced that the Mona Lisa, stolen from the Louvre Museum in Paris in 1911, had been recovered. And in 1915, singer-actor Frank Sinatra was born, Francis Albert Sinatra, in Hoboken, New Jersey. 10 years ago, sophomore tailback Mark Ingram became the first player at the University of Alabama to win the Heisman Trophy. 5 years ago, illustrator Norman Bridwell, 86, the creator of Clifford the Red Dog, died in Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. 1 year ago, Michael Cohen, President Donald Trump's one-time fixer, was sentenced to 3 years in prison for crimes that included arranging the payment of hush money to conceal Trump's alleged sexual affairs. And our thought for today is from Frank Sinatra, who was born in 1915 and died in 1998. And his thought was, if you possess something but you can't give it away, then you don't possess it. It possesses you. All right. Okay, now we will go to the community calendar. The Blandon Memorial Art Museum is open from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. today, and that is at 920 3rd Avenue South, and admission is free. The Webster County Genealogical Society is open from noon to 3 p.m., and that's at the Fort Dodge Public Library, which is located at 424 Central Avenue, and it's in room 134. Webster County retirees meet at noon. The Noon Sertoma Club will meet at noon at the Pizza Ranch. A. Alano Club meets at noon and 7 p.m. at 12 North 7th Street. The Webster County Health Nurses Clinics, 1:30 p.m. at the Palace Park Mobile Home Court. That's at 1338 3rd Avenue Northwest, number 109, which is the Rec Building. And there'll be a blood pressure clinic for any age. Trinity's Festival of Christmas meets from 4:30 to 6 p.m. on Kenyon Road. Al-Anon, Thursday night AFG book study at the Al-Anon Club. That's from 5 to 6 p.m. at 12 North 7th Street. AA meets from 5:30 to 6:30 in Webster City at the Trinity Lutheran Church. The Union Pacific Employees Club number 78 meets from 6 p.m. for a no-host dinner and meeting. And I hope you know where it's at because it's not listed. Bingo meets at 6:30 p.m. at the Opera House. That's at the Fort Museum in Frontier Village at 1 Museum Road. The doors are open at 5 p.m. and early birds start at 6:30 p.m. There's a divorce care at 6:30 p.m. at the Grace Lutheran Church at 211 South 9th Street. And the Corn Belt Chorus Barbershop Harmony Practice is at 7 p.m. at the United Methodist Church, 201 East Nebraska Street in Algona. A Gift of Time, spelled T-H-Y-M-E, is at 7 p.m. at the Webster City Community Theater. That's at 1001 Wilson Avenue, and tickets are $12 per person. Oh, sorry. NA meets from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Shalom Center. That's at 501 North 12th Street. And AA meets at 7 p.m. at the Lake City Union Church on West Main Street in Lake City. Okay. And we also have birthday greetings for Dorothy Williams, who is turning 80. And there's a picture of her, and it says 80 amazing years young, and she does look young. That'll be Saturday, December 14th from 9 to 11 a.m. at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Humboldt. So if you know Dorothy, go to Humboldt and wish her a happy birthday. All right. We also have an article. The Messenger editorial. The new cooperative has stepped up again this year. About 2,000 free hams are being distributed to those in need. Food, like twinkling lights and carefully wrapped presents, is a major component of the holiday season. At family meals across the area, dining room tables will be just about creaking under the weight of all kinds of good things to eat. But unfortunately, not everyone can afford even a modest holiday meal. New Cooperative Incorporated has stepped up again to help meet the need to ensure that more area residents will have a good meal this holiday season. The staff of the Fort Dodge-based cooperative is doing that by distributing about 2,000 free hams this year. 1,200 of those hams were given to people who received a coupon from Upper Des Moines Opportunity Incorporated. Another 800 hams will be given to 17 food pantries in the 13 counties where new cooperative facilities are located. This is the third year that the effort called Hams for Hunger has been conducted. Many of the hams were distributed in Fort Dodge Tuesday at the new cooperative office on First Avenue South. City firefighters joined the cooperative employees and the staff of the Upper Des Moines Opportunity Incorporated to distribute the hams and direct traffic. In our minds, we're in the business of producing food, and it's natural fit to find a way to give it back to some of the less fortunate people in the communities, said new cooperative general manager Dan Dix. Our employees do all the work, Dix added. They feel very good about doing it and seeing the reactions and some of the conversations with the people that we're sharing the hams with. It's kind of priceless for some of them. Every year we have people who tell us we wouldn't have anything for Christmas if it wasn't for this. The crew at New Cooperative Incorporated did not have to do this hunger-fighting effort, and yet they did. We thank them for their dedication to their neighbors who need some help. We also thank the staff of Upper Des Moines Opportunity Incorporated for their constant work to help those who are less fortunate. And we salute the city firefighters for doing yet again something to help the community. And for our political cartoon, we have President Trump, Barr, and FBI Director Wray. And President Trump is saying, "Psst, what's with his pants?" And it says, "No deep state plot against Trump." And that's the FBI director. Okay. Let's go on to active living. And our active living is after 50. Is staying connected. And this, too, is by Elijah. He had a busy morning. As the urban tribe meets every week for dinner, you'll notice something of an outlier compared to the average dinner table in America, both at restaurants and at home. With a group of nearly 20, only one or two smartphones sat on the table. To the extent that those screens were picked up, they only were used to take photographs. But even the photographs taken are physically printed out and shared. This week, group members saw the pictures of them getting on a bus decked out in Santa hats and festive holiday headbands on a recent outing. Even though most of them are friends on Facebook, they meet with intention and regularity at least a couple times each week. I would have brought my phone, but the cord wasn't long enough, one of the members claimed at the observation as they waited for their order at the community tap and pizza. Tuesday night, it was evident that two members of the group were celebrating birthdays, with a table filled with birthday wishes. They were actual cards, no text messages or obligatory posts to Facebook wall, as well as gifts in bags, taking up a considerable amount of space. "Making spirits bright," said one holiday-themed bag. Judging by their interactions, the gift wasn't needed to make spirits bright that night. The cards and gifts were evidently only accessories to enhance their camaraderie. Similarly, they find that technology merely enhances their social lives rather than acting as a substantial replacement of them in person. As they shared a meal, they realized that for all of them, social media was the side dish of their social lives, not the main course, as it were. They couldn't imagine it any other way. "There is not the kind of contact we used to have," said Daryl Beal, one of the group's founders. "People don't just stop by the house like they used to for coffee and spontaneous social visits. Those things have gone the way of the handwritten note and card," he said. "I'm told people don't do that much anymore," he noted. The group, started by Beal and another current member, Ed O'Leary, began as a group of messenger employees who would go out once a week to the hayloft, then across the street from the messenger, for cheap burgers. "It was the first non-career move I ever made," Beal said. As Beal ran for the Iowa Senate in 2002, the group evolved into a tight-knit group for his campaign operations, remaining politically active. Since Beal lost his re-election bid in 2014, politics remained a glue for the group, even as they have grown to be more of a social group than a political one. Some members joke they lowered the standards enough to get into the open club, which used to have many more younger members. "No matter who joins, we welcome them," said 91-year-old Joanne Jenkins, a 12-year member of the Urban Tribe. To her, the friendships she has gained, they are everything. "Politics is a common interest because we all care about the state of the nation," said member Kate Jensen. "But they're more than politicals. In society growing continually more polarized, they find that constant in-person contact can be an antidote, at least part, to the relentless nastiness that has become common fare in the news. The glue that holds us all together is that we're emphatic to people and fair, Jensen explained. They've seen each other through sickness and health, burying some members along the way. As social media makes it possible for folks to say things to people they've never met in a way they would never say in person. In real life contact, they have made a deliberate part of their friendships over the years, and it has become somewhat of an anomaly. For their grandchildren immersed in completely different worlds, it's something they have concerns about. You miss a whole lot without a real contact, a constant reliance on electronic interaction. It's sad, said Terrell Beale's wife, Joanne, even as she talks about being excited to get her new Apple Watch. She wonders when too much screen time is too much and when it starts to impact their connection with the world around them. As 2020 approaches, Urban Tribe members said that being that unusual anomaly isn't something they would have ever imagined as a possibility as the group formed at the turn of the 21st century. The world needs lighthearted fun right now, Jensen said. It's that lightheartedness, she said, that is the key to getting through the tough times, and something that has developed keenly with the light jabs over dinner at the movies and at field trips around the state. Late again as usual, they jabbed at Larry, sneaking in a few minutes after the usual five. You're late on your dues, they chided another. Asked to describe their friendship, the first adjective suggested was animosity to guffaws around the table. It's the nicest group I've ever been in, Jenkins said, in all seriousness. The warmth and acceptance without reservation they found in the group just isn't something they can't imagine replicating over the blue screens. Interaction today is just so different, Joanne Beale said. And we have three pictures. In the top picture, we have Daryl and Joanne Beale. And apparently Daryl had a birthday, and one of the members gave him a birthday gift that looks like an egg with legs. And he got it because it came with a card saying he was a good egg. And we have a picture of Mary Roberts, who's smiling, and she's looking at a picture of a memory of a field trip they took. And the last one is a picture of the field trip, and they're getting on the bus with their hats and their bands. Very, very nice. Okay, I am now, here we go. I had to find my list here. I am going, it's 8:57, and, well, excuse me, it's not that, it's 8, it's 8:30. I'm not with it this morning. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. It is now 8:30, and I am going to read the obituaries. And there are several of them today. The first one, let me get my paper out here. The first one is Lamona M. Folkerts. Lamona M. Folkerts, 91 of Fort Dodge, passed away Tuesday, December 10th at the Simpson Healthcare Center at Friendship Haven. Memorial services will be at 3:30 p.m. Friday, December 13th at Grace Lutheran Church with Pastor Dan Call officiating. A private family burial will be in St. John's Lutheran Cemetery, east of Palmer, Iowa. A visitation will be 2:30 p.m. Friday until the start of the service at the church. Lofusweiler Sievers Funeral Home is serving the family. Lamona, I bet her name is Lamona. Lamona is survived by her daughters, Jane and husband John Junkman of Manson, and Lana and husband Brian McHughes of Wichita, Kansas. a son-in-law, Gary Doster, of Rockwell City, 8 grandchildren, 17 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandson. She was preceded in death by her parents, John and Martha Poppinga Martins, her husband, Wilbert Folkerts, her daughters, Kay Condon, Joy Folkerts, and Marcy Doster, and her brother, Harlan Martins. Lamona Mae Martins was born August 14, 1928, at home in Gilmore City. She attended rural grade school until 8th grade, then graduated from Manson High School in 1947. On February 5, 1950, she was united in marriage to Wilbert Folkerts. The couple established their home in Fort Dodge, and she worked for Friendship Haven for 21 years. She also worked for Northwoods Living for 6 years. She was a member of the Grace Lutheran Church. Lamona was dedicated to her strong faith. She was confirmed at Gilmore City Lutheran Church. She loved to travel and dance. She also enjoyed spending time with her family. She was especially fond of her 80th birthday party that she spent with her family, including her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Memorials may be left to the Unity Point Hospice or Friendship Haven. And again, that was Lamona M. Folkerts, and that was spelled F-O-L-K-E-R-T-S. And the next one is Arthur Richard Christensen, and this is from Humboldt. Arthur Richard Christensen, 93, passed away on Tuesday, December 10th at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. He is survived by his daughter, Jana and husband, Tim Terwilliger of Humboldt, and his granddaughters, Michelle and husband, Andy Kluss, and Molly and husband, A.J. Dickinson. His great-granddaughter, Darby, and his brothers, Don and wife, Marilyn Christensen of Bode, and Roland and wife, Melinda Christensen of Naples, Florida. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Jeanette, his sisters Bernice French, artist Larson, and Ruth Shoemaker, and his brother Virgil, his brothers Virgil and James Christensen. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, December 14th, at the Mason Lindhart Funeral Home in Humboldt. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Sunday, December 15th at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Humboldt. Burial will be in Union Cemetery. And that was Arthur, also known as Richard Christensen. Next, Maxine Frances Johnson. This is from Jewel. Funeral service will be held at 5 p.m. Friday with a time of visitation to follow until 7 p.m. at the Bowman Funeral Home in Webster City. And that was Maxine Frances Johnson. Carol B. Antle, this is from Fort Dodge. Memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at historic Bruce Funeral Home. Interment will be in place at the Otho Cemetery, Columbarium, and that was Carol B. Antle. Betty Rugen Schutter, S-C-H-U-T-T-E-R. This is from North Liberty. Betty Rugen Schutter, 100, of North Liberty, Iowa, died on December 11th at Keystone Evergreen in North Liberty. Kenneth J. Hansen, and this is from Duncombe. Kenneth J. Hansen, 66, of Duncombe, passed away on Monday, December 9th at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, December 14th at 12 p.m. at the Loffesweiler Seavers Funeral Home. Burial will take place at St. Joseph's Cemetery in Duncombe, and visitation will be on Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Loffesweiler Funeral Home. Survivors include his wife, Janice of Duncombe, a son, Ryan of Duncombe, and daughters, Ashley and husband Logan Kuchira of Sioux City, and Melissa and husband Cameron Nelson of Fort Dodge. Also one grandson on the way. His brothers, Johnny Jr. Hansen of Decatur, Illinois, Roger Hansen of Duncombe, and his sister Marlene Hansen of Duncombe, and numerous brother and sisters-in-law, nieces, nephews, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his parents, John K. and Mary Pauline McGuire Hansen. Kenneth James Hansen was born on September 27, 1953, in Fort Dodge. He was raised in Duncombe, where he attended grade school and later graduated from Webster City High School in 1972. Throughout his 20s, Kenny loved to travel around the country on his beloved Harley-Davidson motorcycle. On July 30, 1983, he was united in marriage to Janice Bachman, and the couple made their home in Duncombe. In 1984, he went to work at Frigidaire until he retired in 2007. Kenny could often be found spending time in his garage working on his pickup, motorcycles, and enjoying good conversations with friends over a cold one. Kenny's family was very important to him, and he valued their time spent together. And that was Kenneth J. Hansen of Duncombe. We also have Rhoda Andrews. Rhoda Andrews, 99, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Tuesday, December 10th, at the Fort Dodge Health and Rehab Services. At the Fort Dodge Health and Rehab Services will be at 2 p.m. on Friday, December 13th, at the Gunderson Funeral Chapel in Fort Dodge. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services on Friday at the Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Fort Dodge. She is survived by her two children, Sandra Patterson and Ted, and wife Kim Andrews, both of Fort Dodge. 7 grandchildren, Mark Patterson and his wife Young Jin, Todd and wife Sally Andrews, Aaron and wife Jessie Meyer Andrews, Tavia Andrews, Marissa Andrews, Melissa, and husband Ernesto Hermosillo, and Matt Brockway. She also has 7 great-grandchildren, Evan, Brandon, Tristan, Maddie, Drake, Talila, and Zuri. She was preceded in death by her husband, Theodore Andrews Sr., her parents, her son-in-law, Jerry Patterson, and her 5 siblings. Rhoda Loesch, L-O-H-S-E, the daughter of Joe and Emma Turner Loesch, was born October 1, 1920, in Ohio. She spent her youth in Ohio and moved to Fort Dodge after marrying Theodore Andrews Sr. in 1941. Theodore passed away in 1949, and Rhoda eventually found a job at the George A. Hormel Company and worked there for 30 years until her retirement in 1982. Rhoda was very active as a member of the Church of God in the Coleman District, teaching Sunday school and playing the piano. She became a member at Epworth United Methodist Church after the Church of God closed. And that was Rhoda Andrews. All right, we also have Urban, known as Jimmy Lawler. Urban Jimmy Lawler, 86, of Fort Dodge, formerly of Clare, passed away Monday, December 9th at Friendship Haven. Funeral services will be held on Monday, December 16th at 10 a.m. at the chapel of Lofusweiler Seaver's Funeral Home at 10:30 a.m. and at Corpus Christi Church with Monsignor Kevin McCoy officiating the Mass of the Christian Burial. Burial will take place at St. James Cemetery in Clare, with military rites conducted by the VFW Post 1856 and the U.S. Army Honor Guard. Visitation will be held on Sunday from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. with a vigil prayer service at 6 p.m. at Lofusweiler Funeral Home. Survivors include his wife of 61 years, Mary Ann of Fort Dodge, his daughter Sharon, and her husband Wayne Holquist of Cottage Grove, Minnesota, and his sons Terry and wife Karen of Clare, Mike and wife Tanya of Fort Dodge, Phil and wife Sarah of Georgetown, Kentucky, John and wife Michelle of T, South Dakota, Matt and wife Carrie of Sioux Falls, and Joe and wife Melissa of Clare. 25 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren, and a brother-in-law named Kevin Walsh. He was preceded in death by his parents, Urban Jerry and Catherine Mahoney Lawler, 3 grandchildren, Brian Holquist, Rachel Lawler, and Jack Lawler, his brother, Kevin Lawler, and his sister, Mary Ellen Walsh. Urban James Lawler was born April 5, 1933, in Fort Dodge. He was raised and educated in Clare, graduating from St. Matthew's High School in 1951. Jimmy served in the U.S. Army from 1954 until honorable discharge in 1956. On April 12, 1958, he was united in marriage to Mary Ann George at the St. Matthew's Church in Clare, where Jimmy served on the Finance Committee, Eucharist minister, and sang in the choir for many years. The couple made their home on a farm near Clare, where he farmed his entire life. Jimmy was a member of the Knights of Columbus, past school board member at St. Edmund, was a longtime volunteer on the Clare Fire Department since 1968, and memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. And again, that was Urban, known as Jimmy Lawler. Kenneth A. Earle, E-R-A-L. This is from Pocahontas. Kenneth A. Earle, 96, of Pocahontas, Iowa, passed away on Tuesday, December 10th at the Pocahontas Community Hospital in Pocahontas, Iowa. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December 14th, at the Resurrection of Our Lord Catholic Church in Pocahontas, Iowa, with Father Craig Collison officiating. Burial will take place at the Calvary Cemetery in Pocahontas. Visitation is from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December 14th at the church. Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas, Iowa is handling the arrangements. And that's Kenneth A. Earle. And one more, Joanne Lee. Joanne Lee, 84, of Fort Dodge, died Wednesday, December 11th at Simpson Health Care Center at Friendship Haven. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 16th at the First Presbyterian Church, and visitation is from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday at Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. And also at Gunderson's, we have Dick Holst. His funeral is 10:30 a.m. Friday at the First Baptist Church, with visitation from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Gunderson's. And Rhonda Andrews, whose funeral is at 2 p.m. Friday at the Gunderson Chapel, with visitation from 1 to 2 p.m. Friday at Gunderson's. And at Laufesweiler's, we have Lamona Folkerts, who I've already read about, Carlene Allard, who's 81, and her graveside service is at 11 a.m. Saturday at the Early Union Cemetery. Also, I'm checking to see if I read these. Yep, so I read about Kenneth Hamston and Jimmy Lawler. All right, so those are our condolences to all of those obituaries for today. All right, checking to see what time we have here. Okay, I think I can go on to the sports page. I think I've read everything from everything else. Okay, this is, excuse me, by Dana Becker, and it's Cross Rodriguez named All-Americans. This is from Iowa Central. Fresh off another win in the Graphic Edge Bowl and a second consecutive winning season, 6 members of the Iowa Central football team were named to the NJCAA All-American teams. Richard Rodriguez and Daquan Cross were selected to the first team, Eugene Brown and Rashad Whitty to the second, and DJ Irons and Tenarius Achan landed on the honorable mention list. The Tritons, who finished the year ranked 18th in the nation, were also ICCAC champions and won the Kinney Cup this past fall. Iowa Central played 5 of the top 10 teams this past year and 7 of the top 20. Rodriguez, a freshman offensive lineman, helped pave the way for the ground attack that averaged almost 160 yards rushing per game. Overall, Iowa Central averaged 370.5 yards of offense and just under 30 points, including a win in the bowl over Nashua. Nassau, I'm sorry. It's insane to me to be honored, but none of it would have been possible without my coaches, Rodriguez said. They put me in the position I am right now, and also my teammates for always pushing me to try to be the best I could be. Rodriguez, who is a standout at Spencer in high school, will be returning to Iowa Central next fall for his sophomore season. Cross, a sophomore linebacker, led Iowa Central's defense with 81 tackles. He also had 6 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, and an interception. Cross broke up 5 passes on the year. Last year, Cross was one of the 3 Tritons honored as an All-American, earning honorable mention honors. He finished his 2-year Iowa Central career with 158 tackles, 8 sacks, 15.5 stops for loss, 5 forced fumbles, 3 picks, and 11 pass breakups. Brown, a sophomore member of the secondary, was second on the team with 75 stops. He had 3 fumble recoveries and broke up 4 passes with tackle for loss. This means a lot, and I am just grateful and blessed to make the list, Brown said. I'm just not satisfied yet. I still have a lot to improve on, but I'm glad that people supported me through this journey and that none of my hard work went unnoticed. Iowa Central has had 9 players named to the first, second, or honorable mention All-America teams over the past 2 seasons and 16 overall on squads since 2014. So, that's pretty good. Okay, we have, under Dodger Wrestling that we are going to have varsity action. Let's see, where are we at here? Fort Dodge lineup. The opponent will be Des Moines North Hoover. And variety action will start at approximately 7 p.m. in the Dodger Gym. A talented senior class is being recognized to open the evening's festivities. Carson Taylor is a defending state champion, while Brooks Cowles, Savon Wheat, Austin Lee, and Levi Egley have all been state place winners. Brandon Mills and Colton Munter are also in the starting lineup. Jacob Laird, Lazario Lerma, George Lewis Blanco, Cooper Rossing, and Ryland Balaka are the other seniors on the roster. Elle McClintock and Bree Campbell are senior managers. All right, and we have from, it doesn't have time and location here. Oh, here we go. Yeah. All right. This is from the Gales. Theirs will be at 6 p.m. at Clarion. And freshman Ronnie Orris secured an individual title the last time they wrestled. And the Gales at Doug Wood Manson Northwest Webster Invitational. Orris won all 3 matches for the first period pin in his varsity tournament debut. Teammate Tyler Rossmith, a sophomore, was a runner-up at 170 pounds, and senior Noah Carlson placed 6th with 160 pounds, while Rick Zhu at 120, a sophomore, Ellie Berry at 132, and freshman Johnny Dickerson, 145, were also in action. Returning state qualifier Ryan Duckett, a junior, missed the tournament with a severe calf strain. In their only dual action to date, St. Edmund fell 78-6 to Algona and 66 versus Hampton Dumont last Thursday. Duckett won by major decision and forfeit, while Orris and senior Jonah Hinder also secured match victories. All right, let's see what else we've got here. We can go. What time is it? Okay, we've got time. To the hot corner, rookie, this is 1937, rookie Sammy Baugh throws second half touchdown passes of 55, 78, and 33 yards to overcome a 14-7 Chicago lead and give Washington a 28-21 victory over the Bears for the championship. In 1965, Chicago's Gale Sayers scored 6 touchdowns with 336 combined yards to lead the Bears to a 61-20 rout of the San Francisco 49ers. The 6 touchdowns gave Sayers an NFL record 21 for the season. Sayers' first touchdown is a reception, the next 4 rushing, and the final an 85-yard punt return. In 1977, the NBA commissioner Larry O'Brien fines Kermit Washington $10,000 and suspends the Los Angeles Lakers forward for at least 60 days or 26 games for punching Houston's Rudy Tomjanovic during a game on December 9th. The suspension is the longest ever in NBA history, and the fine is the maximum permissible under league rules. Tomjanovic suffered fractures to face, upper jaw, and nose. In 1982, New England beats Miami 3-0 with the help of a snowplow. Heavy rains the night before soaked the AstroTurf surface at Schaefer Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. A snowstorm hits during the game, and an emergency ground rule allows the ground crew to use a snowplow to clear the yard markers. All right. That's it for sports, I think. Let's see what else we've got here. Well, we've got, what time is it? 50? Okay. We've got quite a bit in the police log, but I will read some of it. Eluding. Stephen Clayton II, 35, preliminary hearing set for December 13th. Failure to yield, Stephen Clanton again, continued for 180 days, and also speeding, and that will be continued for 180 days. Operating while intoxicated, the first offense, Betty Flickinger, 69, preliminary hearing set for December 20th. She was also driving on the wrong side of the road, which that one is continued for 180 days. Possession of a controlled substance, Justin Cuvas, 30, continued to Monday, and he also had interference, which is continued to Monday. Violation of probation, Cody Tucker, public defender appointed. Jessica Nelson was speeding. She's 37, lives in Rockwell City, and is paying $148.50. From Saturday, I'll read you Saturday too. From Saturday, we have possession of a controlled substance, Kiera Miracle, 36, no address available, preliminary hearing waived, and she also has one for disorderly conduct. Probation violation, Thomas Meeks, 23, of 334 7th Avenue North, transferred to district court for scheduling. Public intoxication, Cammy Hilton, 24, of West Des Moines, sentenced to 3 days in jail plus court costs. Domestic abuse assault, John William Dugan III, 30, of 1812 3rd Avenue North, sentenced to 30 days in jail, all but two suspended. And operating while intoxicated, Brody Schlisky, 2119 North 29th. His preliminary hearing is set for December 27th. Okay, we're at 52. I think what I'm going to do is, I have to find it first. Here we go. I'm going to read what the weather's going to be, and then we'll see how much time I have left. Today, mostly cloudy, high around 38, low around 19, wind south 6 to 10 miles per hour. On Friday, mostly cloudy, high around 38 and low around 12. On Saturday, mostly cloudy, high around 18, low around 1. On Sunday, partly sunny with a high around 18 and a low around 10. Monday, partly sunny with a high around 26 and a low around 9. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high around 22 and a low around 9. And Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high around 16 and a low around 6. Now, our yesterday's high was 38 and our low was 19. And last year, the high was 32 and the low was 25. So, okay. Let's see. I've got a little bit of time here. I thought this was interesting. This is Dear Annie. Dear Annie, I was a lousy husband, not because of physical or emotional abuse, but because of ignorance. I grew up in a household where I never heard my father tell my mother he loved her. I never heard him give her a compliment or ask her opinion. He was a hard worker and a good provider. She bought whatever she needed, never wanted for anything. She just existed. I just existed. I guess you can say we were just not a family. We were three people living in the same house doing what we were supposed to do. I treated my wife in the same way. She didn't complain. She came from the same kind of family. She was an angel. She deserved much better. It wasn't until she passed and I lived alone with time to learn from the media that I understood how ignorant I was and how bad I was to her. I wish I could tell her how much I loved her and that I am truly sorry. Ignorant husband. Dear ignorant husband. Ignorant husbands don't write letters like this one. Your letter does not come across as being from someone ignorant. In fact, it comes across, you come across, as someone who might have made some mistakes in the past and has always cared deeply. Your ability to express that has changed. Your wife sounds like an amazing woman. I am truly sorry for your loss, but rest assured that you are being way too hard on yourself. If you had this realization, I'm sure you had moments of love and joy. Try to remember all the good times you had with your wife. When we know better, we do better. At the time, you didn't know. So there is no use beating yourself up. You're grieving right now. Find a support group for widowers. Perhaps individual counseling could help you. Just by writing this letter, you are bringing awareness to other husbands or spouses who might be doing the same thing and want to change. Thank you for sharing your story and expressing how much you love your wife. I have no doubt she knows it. And the second letter, do I have time? 8:56. Nope, I'm getting close to the end here. All right. I get all confused with this numbers and the computer. I'm sorry. Okay. Where am I at here? Here we go. Where are we at? Yep. That brings us to the end of the reading of today's Fort Dodge Messenger. I thank the people at Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years, and I thank you for listening. With Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. I'm wishing you all a dream to bless and a star to guide. And I'll sit here. Try that again. I'll be talking to you again in another week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.